Accession number 18767, reel 3.
This is Ken Chambers, reel 2. Now, Ken, can you tell me some of the big contrasts that you know, that you witnessed during your career, from the days that you started on Blenheim's to the Hercules and so on? I mean, it's a huge change in technology. What are your impressions of those changes?
Well, when you went from the piston engine to the jet engine, it did make things easier as far as engine changes or jobs on them, because they worked it all out. They all had set pieces. If something went wrong, you diagnose something was wrong, you just take that out and put a new one in. Whereas on the old piston engines, sometimes, if it like generators, you had to take them off and get them into your own workshop, and they had to do the skimming and all that to get it right. It just wasn't rush off and get spares, just like that. But with the jet, it did make things easier, you know. Hydraulic-wise, of course, or airframe, that got more complicated.
Well, you had power controls and things.
That's right, yes, that's right, that's right.
Electrics as well?
Well, it all turned into electronics, isn't it, in the end, you see, and then you've got all this super instrumentation now that you didn't have then, you see. The old Blenheim was a wonderful aeroplane, a very simple aeroplane, and everybody that worked on them liked it, and the people that flew them liked them, you know, as you'll see when you talk to Ray Paul, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, excellent they were. Lovely aeroplane. Still going today in places.
Yes, it's amazing how they can find people to rebuild them.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. I mean, it's over 50 years that they've been going. But to say it's they're still flying some around, you know, civilian now. Mm-hmm. But
I gather there are still complications. I mean, I believe a Harrier engine change takes a long time because you've got to take the wings off to get to it. Or something.
Oh, I didn't know that. No, I've never
had. Really
I've never had any dealings with a Harrier. No. In fact, the only jets I got involved with, of course, was the FTU when there was Vampires, which they did their normal training on night and day, and then of course that was to get them fit for jet flying. And then they had to deal with all the ones that were going to ferry. But then they used to ferry piston ones, they used to ferry all lightnings, which are ones with the twin engines, you know, that we had in those days.
Oh, really? Did the RAF have them?
Yeah, but they weren't American lightnings, they were...
the jet lightnings?
The jet lightnings, but yeah. we had a twin-engine piston job. Piston engine, inline engines.
Yeah.
But in fact, I remember some of them at Coulter Shoulder when I was up there on the bullfighters. There was some there.
Well, that was the American P-38, wasn't it?
The P-38, that was the Lightning one, yes. Yeah. But these were, I forget who made these, because I think they had Peregrine engines in them, which was our lot, you know. But mm-hmm. I say it's going back a bit now. I don't remember it all.
But,
yeah, well, you just about had my career, haven't you, from
nothing else you can think
from
about
day one.
Your German days. I mean, did you go away for R&R in Germany?
I wondered if you'd bring that up. I did have a small problem. We had to, when we had our dues in the sergeant's mess, we used to invite these German WACs or RACs, whatever they call them, you know, from, they had their own sergeant's mess in Bad Oeynhausen, and say.
These are German girls.
These are English
girls.
Army
yeah.
girls.
Yeah.
We used to have them over, say, and then a warrant officer that was with them said, why don't you come over to our mess, you see, and have a few jugs and all that. That was all right, but it was very difficult getting there. See, there wasn't any transport laid on or anything like that. So, unfortunately for me, I dug up some sergeant who was an air traffic controller, I think. And we thumbed our way over there. We managed to get there, found the sergeant's mess. So we were all in uniform, you see. We went in there, and, oh, we had a good night, you know. But, of course, there wasn't any, there was a curfew on in the army place, you see, which we weren't aware of course. And there was no question of night stopping there, you know, sleeping up with these gals didn't do it in them days, did they, you see. So, of course, we start making our way back. Well, we got to the entrance to the camp there with the old pole barrier down and all that. And there was an army sentry in there, say, and he said, "Where are you chaps heading, say?" I said, "Well, we're going back to Buckaburg." He said, "God, you never walk it, you know, it's miles. Come in here and sit in here." And he said, "I'll stop everything that's going out of here." He said, "I'll get you a lift, you see." So we thought, oh, it's great, you know. So we sat in his guardhouse thing, you know. Anyway, a jeep come roaring up and went out through the barrier, and I see there were three red caps in it and a civilian, German DPP. They started up, and then they stopped, and it backed up, because one of them happened to see us sitting there, see, blue jobs, you know, instead of brown jobs. Of course, he come in and said, "What have you got, Tom?" So we told him what we'd been doing, you know, and we were on our way back to boat. He said, "You're out of curfew here." He said, "I've got to arrest you both." So he took us to, and we were put in a cell. And he said, "I'll have to ring up Buckaburg, get your orderly officer, and he'll have to come down and get you." But we had a night, we had it all night there, you know, in this cell, you know, all our bed. I'd never been in a prison in my life before, you know, and he was in a different one. Anyway, the orderly officer came down, or the orderly sergeant came down with a transport and picked us up. And of course, we were charged, of course. And but I didn't get anything. The other chap got a reprimand, I think, because he said he ought to have known better because he was stationed there, but I was only detached, you know, so...
And you were a sergeant, right?
That's right.
You could have lost your stripes, I suppose, could you?
Well, he said, "Well, you don't do it again," you know, so I was kind of what they would call admonished, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But he was reprimanded, the other sergeant, and so I said, "I'll never do that trip again there, you know, unless you're organized, you know, with some transport." But there was nothing to say. You could get transport, taxis and things today, but there's nothing like that out there.
Did you see anything of Germany while you were there?
Not really. Only when we used to go to this village where we had this restaurant where we used to do these dances. I think in the town, whether it was Buckaburg or Bad Elson, I think there was a Malcolm Club there. We had Malcolm Clubs in them days. But that's about it, you know. Don't think anybody went anywhere there. You made all your entertainment in the sergeant's mess at nights, you know, on weekends.
Did you have any visiting shows, like they had Insta shows during the war?
No, I don't recall any there.
No.
Don't recall any there at all. It was very nice when they built the new sergeant's mess. We all moved in there. That was very grand, you know.
Yeah, dances there, I suppose.
Yeah, say we had a lovely New Year's Eve ball on the new. That was New Year's Eve 48-49. Yeah, fancy dress. Oh, it was good. Of course, we had army people there. Station commander was there, guest of honor, you know, and all that, and his lady. Oh yeah, that was great. That was good. But I don't think they had any of that time for things like that up at Bunsdorf or Lübeck or Fasburg. It was all flogging all the time. Because
yeah.
You're either on shift or in bed, you know. That was that. So.
Do your grandchildren ask you much about your service life?
Well, funny she should say that. The other day she said, "Have you got any old photographs of you?" You know, and so I said, "Well, I've got them up there, and that's my boyhood service, you know, and that was my wedding." And so she said, "Well, we were doing something at the school, you know, so I had to take them all out of frames yeah. in Giverin, and she took them to school. And I think they really liked me to have gone to the school, I think, and had a chat with them, you know, but I was never really asked. Mm. And I thought, I'm going to push it because it's a private school, see. And I know the old principal of the school, the woman, she's Miss Yvonne, she's quite a Tartar, you know. But, yes, she asked about it. But, of course, the boy's only five, you see, so he would, he's four, he's not five yet. And the granddaughter is nine. But, that's the only time they've shown any interest in it, you know. In fact, my daughter went everywhere with us, you know, when I was serving, and I did a session in Australia, you know.
Not, did you go out there?
Well, I was on what do they used to call it there?
Is that at Woomera?
No, this was at Elizabeth, which is just outside of Adelaide, and we were integrated with the Australians. You know, I had Australian airmen as well as my own airmen. You know, but they had a warrant officer there, old Blanche. But while I was there, I went out there in the summertime, I think, and then only a few months I was there. I was promoted to warrant officer, you see, which was a bit awkward because there was already a warrant officer there, albeit he was an Australian. So my CO there, that was an Australian, of course, and he sent for me, or I went to see him because I said, I'd just been promoted. And he said, oh, great. Oh, so I said, well, I should have to go home, see. Well, we'll see about that, he says. I want you here to look after the RAF element that's here. So he stalled it off for quite a while, you know. But in the end, you see, they had a vacancy back here, and they wanted me to fill it, of course, you know.
So what were you doing out there? What aircraft were you
Well, on? We had, it was all trials. We had Canberras. When they used to do these trials with Doppler and Minitrack and all this radar stuff, and it was coming good then. And then they used to go up to Woomera, of course, you know, and do some kind of bombing stuff up there. And but I stayed strictly at Elizabeth, and I was up with the first line service.
And they were all Canberras you were working on?
They were all Canberras, yeah. And then, of course, we had a maintenance hangar where there was RAF in there as well, and they used to do all the big servicings, you know, in there.
So you went out with a squadron, did you, as part of
that? Oh, no, I just went on my own. Well, I took my wife with me, you know, and my family. Well, I had just my daughter. We all went out together because we lived down in actual Elizabeth itself. The field was called Edinburgh Field.
But was there an RAF flying contingent with you?
No.
They were all Australian Air Force?
All Australian, except a few of us, it was integrated with them. But then, of course, we used to have the visiting Britannias used to fly out there with our own crews, you know, and they used to night stop and take stuff back, you know, stores and whatever.
So were you supplementing the Australian Air Force as far as maintenance support?
More or less, yes.
They were short of fitters, were they?
Well, I don't know what the reasons were, whether it was a political kind of reason, you know, that they wanted some of us there at the same time. But there was two flights. There was one that used to do all the visiting aircraft. All the Britannias used to come with that because that's what we had then. And I was over with the trials flight. So.
Yeah.
But I didn't go to any other airfields while I was there. Just stayed there. But that was quite interesting, you know, a couple of years there.
How long did you spend in Libya with the Beverleys?
Well, I think I did two detachments out there. They were about a week at a time. Not very long. It was just to get the night flying done, you see, but we used to take everything. Had to take spare engine, spare props, all this, you know. But then they were big enough to carry all this stuff because we all had the seats up at the boom, you see. But of course, it took ages to get there. And of course, we used to go into Nice to refuel. And of course, they used to drip oil everywhere, you know, and it was very embarrassing. You get on these nice posh pans there and the civil air, and all this oil, you have to try and wipe some of it up, you know.
Why did they drip oil?
I mean, well, I don't know. They were getting a bit ancient then, I think, some of the engines, and they used to get these leaks, you know.
Yeah.
To find them, you see, you had to strip it all off and clean them all, and then start it up, and then get close enough to see where it was running out, you know. Well, we used to sort some of them out, of course, but we did all sorts out there. We did engine changes while we were out there, prop changes. Oh, yeah, a lot. There's some good lads on the Beverly flight they used to take out. They worked like the clappers, you know. All night work, you see, because we didn't do anything in the day. Except when it got bad retrication, you had to do that as well, so you had to get it, otherwise they weren't ready for the night, you see. So it was a bit awkward, but normally it was just night flying. The air crew just did nights.
Did you work on the Andover at all?
No. They had Andovers at Benson, of course, and the Queen's Flight. No, I never worked on them.
Mm. And of course you worked on the Hercules in the last year.
No, I never worked on Hercules. No, I've been aboard them, and you know, when we were down at Lynham, but no, I never worked on any of them. I'd say it's all new Air Force to me now. So
yeah.
This was back in 1956. I'd been buried, and I managed to get into married quarters up there, and I just had a brand new baby, which was my
daughter.
This is a Benson, yeah. And I was on the ferry unit then, of course, up there. And we had some twin Pioneers. And they were going to ferry them out to Salita in Singapore. So I was sent for, and they said, we want an engineer to come with us, you see. It was just two crews and me. Oh, they those days they had one navigator who was Polish, a signaller who was Singhalese, and old Cliff Mayer was a flight lieutenant, and then there was a master pilot. So I said, oh, very nice. Well, my wife wasn't very happy about it because she didn't be left, but fortunately for me, she had a sister that lived down in Cromarsh down here, so a friend of mine moved her down there, you see, to live with her sister because he had this baby, you see. So it was no problem. So off we went. And, it was a long trip because we had to go. Where did we go first? Oh, we went to Bordeaux first in France.
There were just two of you, were there? Two planes?
Just two, yeah. Bordeaux in France. Then we went across the Med to, what was the name of that place now?
It was in Libya.
Oh. That type. It wasn't Tunisia.
El Adam.
No, it wasn't El Adam.
Benghazi.
No, it wasn't Benghazi. It was further up the coast.
Libya.
Yes.
Yeah.
And from there, of course, then we had to go down over the Sahara, you see. So we had to stop at two. One place was called Taman Rasset. It's an oasis, you know, but they got a strip there, you know. And this place was a bit rough because they had the legionnaires there, you know. Oh, dear. They all get drunk with their old duty, you know. They're all...
It's not a really direct route to Salina.
We had to go by the distance you could fly, see, without refueling, you see. And we had to do that.
Yeah.
We had to go that way. And then we went out to Kano.
What, to go to the Far East?
Yeah, went to Kano.
A long way around.
And then we went up to forget the other place. Anyway, we ended up at Khartoum.
Yeah.
And then from Khartoum, of course, we went across to El Adam, you see, and we stopped there. And then we had to fly up to Mazira then. Up the coast of the Oman, and then Mazira over to Karachi to Delhi, Delhi was, customs were pretty nasty at Delhi, because we picked up all our booze at Al Adam, of course, because it's all cheap, you see, there. And fags and all that, because we weren't coming back. We were leaving and we could come back civilian, you know. And then we went up to Delhi, and customs bloke come aboard, and he walked around and said, "What's in there?" "It was whiskey, it was bottles of whiskey." We had to give him one, you know. I thought, well, I'm damned, you know. Mm. Otherwise, he could have made things a bit awkward, you know. And then the chap that was refueling us, Burma Shell, you know, he's one of these, he says, "Have you got any bully beef?" See? And I said, "Bully beef? No." I said, "What do you..." "Oh, I lived on it during the war." He said he was in one of the services now. And I just thought, if I'd have known he wanted it, I could have bought it in the nappy. I couldn't. I took it out there and made a few bob, you know. Where'd he go?
I'm still baffled by the fact you had to go all the way down to Cardiff.
Yes, I don't know why.
I mean, I would have thought if you'd flown to Nice and then to Athens or something, that would have been a far more direct route.
Yes, it would have been. That would have been a simpler route.
Yeah.
I don't know why we did all this. Somebody planned it out, I suppose.
But, your Polish navigator.
Oh, he was pretty hopeless, because when they'd all had a lot of drinks here at Aden when we were leaving to go to Mazira, and the pilot, old Cliff Mayer, he liked his sherbet too much, you know, and he was feeling rough. In fact, it was AOCs down there. Fortunately, we were stuck on some pan somewhere, and the AOC didn't come anywhere near us, you know. And when we got airborne, he got the navigator to fly it, see, while he went down the back for a bit of a kip, see, and he said, "You go out front, sit up with..." So I sat in the second dicky seat, as it were, and then we were flying up to Mazira, and then you're coming across some real black hills there. And of course, when you look at them, you look as if you're going straight into them, you know. And old Cliff was asleep down the back. And this Polish chap said to me, "Mr. Engineer," that's what he used to call me, "Mr. Engineer, give me some more power," say. And as soon as he mentioned that word, Oak Cliff was up in a flash. And he was up front, "Get him out," you know. And I said, "Oh, I'll get out." "And you stop there," he said. And he got back in, you know. It must have flashed in his subconscious, he's going to do something, you know. And we flew, so I flew on to Mazira, and I landed with him, you know. It was all right, very good. Funny lot. Mm. And then our signaller, I forget his name, but he was Singhalese. And when we were flying, where were we flying? Before we got to Aden, he was using his key to talk to people in Ceylon. But old Cliff, who was the captain of the whole ship, he found out about this. And he says, "You know, you could be in serious trouble for doing this." And he said, "In fact, I could have probably offload you at Aden, and I'll pick up a signaller there, you know, and you'll be for the eye jump, you know." I felt sorry for him then. I thought, "Oh, poor old devil, you know." Anyway, they didn't. He didn't take any action on it, because when we flew up from Aden. No, before we got away, we went to Eritrea, and he was still in the suit, you see. But we all went to dinner, and the signal is he never turned up for dinner. He had his dinner sent up to his room. I suppose he was ruined the day. Used his key to talk to his friends down there, you know, but didn't do anything about it. And we went on to Salita, all right, no problems there. And then, of course, and it was trying to get back. Of course, you could be a bit awful, because as a ferry crew, you get priority to come back to the UK, you see, and then you could offload families, you see, if they wanted to. So we said, "No, I'm never going to do that. We're going to come back by Constellation." Lovely trip back at Obey, and free booze and all that on it, you know. But we never did get the Constellation. We still got bunged on a Hastings to come back. And that was all right. No, I remember it now. Kano was on our way back in the Hastings.
Oh.
We went into Kano on the way back. Because, and there again, you see, all... He drank too much, this little Singhalese. I didn't think they drank, you know, but anyway.
He wasn't coming back with you, was he?
Well, he came back with us, yeah.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, he did come back with us, because I think we landed at Blackbush. And then
this was RAF Hastings.
This was RAF Hastings, yeah, and we landed at Blackbush, and we had to go through customs there, you know, and I only had the standard bottle and 200 fags, you know, but the single is he had two bottles of whiskey, say. So when we were going through customs, they were all bored. It was night time, you know, and they said, "What have you got?" And I said, "Oh, 200 fags and a bottle." And this Singhalese gets there, he said, "Oh, he had his fag. I've got two bottles of whiskey," say. Now, this customs bloke was quite reasonable. He said, what did you say?" He meant him then to revert and say, "I've got one bottle," you see. But no, he kept insisting on his two bottle. So they charged him for it.
Yeah.
Twit, you know. So we all got on the transport and come back to Benson then.
Any other overseas trips did you do like that?
No, not service wise. No, that's all.
Well, I think we probably have come to the end, haven't we?
Yes, I think we have.
Think of?
No, I can't think of anything else.
Thank you very much indeed.